This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to the show on these websites and at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today, I have the honor to be in Montreal, Canada, talking to Claire Gallagher and Peggy Cook with Acorn Canada.
Hi, Wade.
Welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks, Wade.
Thank you.
Okay, so Claire is the director of sort of research and what is your exact title?
I'm the National Research and Communications Coordinator for Acorn Canada.
National Research and Coordination. And Peggy Cook, what is your exact title?
I'm the National Administrator for Acorn Canada.
So in my world, y'all are the two people who seem to be the glue holding this huge 100,000 member organization together, and certainly have been hugely helpful to Acorn International over the last year. Claire, you've been doing, finally gotten our newsletter trained to run on time. What is this newsletter, Acorn International? And what is that like to try to herd these cats to get that job done?
So the newsletter, we're basically just trying to share updates from the affiliates of Acorn across the world. So I send out emails asking people to submit their stories every month. You know, we have to do some chasing. They don't always get there in time, but we've had this running for a few months now, and it's going pretty well. We get it translated into French. We have updates from all over, from India, from the UK, from Canada, from Honduras. So it's a really great way for our members to hear what's going on in other parts of the world.
Yeah, and it's been fantastic because I know I send it out to my whole list, and so do y'all in Canada, and
yeah.
I think they do so in France and the UK as well, for sure. And I get a lot of good response.
Yeah.
You know, is that what's happening? You know, because truth to tell, I've been, you know, not as good in the communication side with all of the people that we know from Acorn International. And your accent is distinctive. This is a Montreal accent? No.
This is how they speak French in Montreal. No, I'm kidding.
Our listeners would believe that now. No.
I'm from Scotland, but I live in Toronto, in Canada.
So what we're hearing is a form of a Glasgow. You were originally from Glasgow? No?
Yes, I am. This is a Glasgow accent that I afflicted with.
Yes, exactly right. But it's starting to go more Canadian. And Peggy, where are you from in Canada?
From Halifax, Nova Scotia.
And for people who are listening in the middle south area of the U.S. as opposed to Canada or UK or whatever, where is Halifax, Nova Scotia?
Halifax is, Nova Scotia is a maritime province on the eastern coast of Canada.
Right at the Atlantic Ocean?
Right on the Atlantic Ocean, yep.
And did you live within sight of the Atlantic Ocean when you were coming up?
Yes.
Wow.
You can see the harbor from pretty much everywhere in Halifax.
And it's a beautiful little town. We happened to be there at an odd time once, for it was around St. Patrick's Day, which they take very seriously in Halifax.
It was St. Patrick's Day. It was Burger Festival Week. It was just a collision of worlds. It was
exciting. Let me tell you, there were people in line for the pub at 8 in the morning when I went out looking for a cup of coffee at... So that was Halifax, and how long have you been in the Toronto area?
I only lived in Halifax till I was 4, moved around since then, but I've lived in Toronto for 8 years.
Okay. So, Nova Scotia, New Scotland, and Scotland, I mean, this is sort of like a Scottish show we're running here for... And you've been very helpful, I know, to Acorn International, trying to get people to turn in their numbers on membership, and we're a membership organization, and...
Yep.
You'd think it would be easier to have people do that, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't, because I do the same thing for Acorn Canada, so I know that it's a slog to get those numbers. Which is, I think, understandable because organizers want to organize. They don't want to do admin stuff, which is, you know, why we exist. So,
but yeah. They also don't necessarily want to be, it's a membership organization, so they might be resisting being accountable for the membership.
Yeah.
I mean, you think any of that's there, or you just think they're so busy? No wonder they love you. You're so busy they have trouble getting my statistics in. No, they want to get paid to get the statistics in. So, that's the way the world works. So these are hugely important jobs, but a lot of people don't think about what it takes to really support a grassroots organizing operation, do they?
No.
No, they don't. And that's why we're doing this radio show. I know both of you asked me what kind of things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about your jobs. How easy is that? Now, if you can't answer some questions about your jobs, let's just hope Judy and the rest of the leadership don't hear this. But so research, though, and listening to both of your year-end reports, we did a lot of research reports this year. I mean, way more than last year. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think we did. We released around 6 larger reports this year. We do a lot of smaller reports kind of throughout the year, but 6 kind of large ones that we release along with, you know, press conferences and actions. So, yeah, we've done a lot this year.
Tell us about some of these reports. What's one or two of them that were particularly difficult or interesting for you, Claire?
Yeah, so there's definitely a couple that come to mind. In Toronto, we have a campaign there to try to force the city to redefine affordable housing. So just now the definition's based on average market rent, which in Toronto is not affordable at all. It's around $1,200 for a one-bedroom apartment and around $1,400 for a two-bedroom.
Wow.
So obviously for our low-income members, that's just not at all affordable. So, you know, the mayor's going around saying that he's building all these affordable houses. Well, we released a report to say that actually only 1 in 40 new rental units that are built are affordable, and it's
that's 1 in 14?
1 in 40.
140, okay. Yeah. I thought I heard that.
No, I would
clarify that. 1 in 40 is nothing.
And also, you know, they use this really poor definition of affordability. So really, you know, our members are saying there's no affordable housing being built in Toronto. So we released a report to show this and to demand a new definition. Our members had an action, you know, outside a condo, demanding affordable housing in every new development. So the press really loved this report and they loved, you know, the actions. We got a lot of coverage. So it was really, you know, powerful to see the response. The mayor was forced to give a response in the media, and he came out a few days after a report to say, you know, we might have to review the definition. And then a couple of weeks later, City Council passed a motion to actually review the definition of affordable housing. So that was really, you know, good to see the power of our members.
And this also has to do with inclusionary zoning, which is a big issue in the United States as well.
That's right. Yeah, we're fighting for, you know, affordable housing in all new developments. It needs to be truly affordable, and, you know, it can't just be a few units. We need, in Toronto, there's a desperate need for more affordable housing.
So Toronto, which is quite a large cosmopolitan city, is becoming a little bit New York-y, Seattle-y, San Francisco-y. It's starting to price people out in a serious way, not just poor people, but working people.
Yeah, there really are a lot of the same issues, I think, we're seeing in large cities across the world. There's a housing crisis, and low-income tenants are being priced out, for sure.
And this is even despite the fact that there's still social or public housing, as they call it in the United States, and it's pretty significant in terms of Toronto, but still not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Canada, there's like 4% of housing is social housing, so there could definitely be more.
Okay.
But, yeah, they're not... There's not enough socializing, and they're not building affordable housing, so where are low-income tenants supposed to go?
Exactly. Well, we'll get more into the research, and you have a big project coming up this coming year, don't you? The convention you have every 2 years?
That
puts a little bit on your plate, doesn't it, Peggy? What's involved in trying to get a convention for how many people, 300 or 400?
300 we're aiming for this year. The target is, I think, 308 is what the goals are set at. We've been doing every 2 years a national convention for Acorn Canada since 2011 was our first one. So I've been on staff for all of them. And there's a lot involved. There's a lot of, like, logistics involved. And
a lot of that falls on you.
A lot of it does fall on me. Like, I mean, the organizers are in charge of getting their people together, but then everything else is kind of the national office and, like, Claire and I doing it. So, you know, the booking of the venues, everything that comes with that.
Where are they going to meet in Hamilton?
So we'll be in Hamilton, Ontario. We'll be at McMaster University. It's really exciting. We're going to be in some nice air-conditioned dorms.
Members like those air-conditioned dorms. We've had a lot of these conventions in the U.S. where, you know, we almost lost some members who weren't in air-conditioned because we always meet in the summer.
Yeah, and we had a pretty hot convention in 2017 in Ottawa. But yeah, so, you know, putting together that kind of thing, the meeting spaces, but also the logistics of how the convention's going to go. So we do workshops, we do some door knocking, so we take the members out in the field to, like, go door to door, talk to people in the community. And then we do a big action. So that's always something that takes a lot of planning. And, you know, we usually pick one of our big national campaigns and then get everyone to do it, occupy some building.
There you go.
Or, like,
and so for Peggy Cook, National Administrator, what's the hardest part of that job for you?
It's going to sound really boring, but rooming list.
No, that is so an honest answer. We literally, now, obviously in Acorn U.S., when we used to do these biennial conventions, they were very long. I mean, there were 1,000 people plus, and literally people who drew this short straw were often up 28, 48 hours at a time. So once everybody finally got in and across all the dorms, I mean, we had one woman who did this and literally was in bed the rest of it. Never saw it out because my job was I would always try to give whoever did the rooming list problems and had to deal with everybody. I'd always try to get them a sweet job on the big action. So they felt that, yeah. You know, it wasn't alienation from the product, as they say.
Yeah.
Oh my God, never saw Joanne after. I mean, you know, she was just like, and did it for like 2 or 3 conventions and just would collapse and we wouldn't see her for a week or so. It was just
it's
stressful.
It's
I think she probably still blames me for permanent mental damage, you know, it's like one of those things. And then for a long time, I mean, people who do that job, I mean, it's got to be different next 2 years, you know, but every year. And this was, some of these were pre-computer. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Sometimes I think that might be easier.
3x5 cards.
Honestly,
sometimes the colleges aren't helpful, or they have their system versus our system, and oh my God.
Yeah, I kind of think, like, if I was the only one who had access to it, if it was just on paper, that actually might be easier.
You're thinking about that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, maybe so, but you get up to 1,000 or 1,400, and it's a lot of pieces of paper. And what's the most fun you have in your pieces of the job when you go to the convention?
Actually, I was first working for Acorn, I started in 2010, and then we had the convention in 2011. I was still working part-time for Acorn, and we had the big action in Ottawa at the Ministry of Finance. It was on remittances. And we made a giant invoice for what the government owed the people for, like, all the remittances that they've been sending back home to their families and all the fees that were charged on that. So it was a really great action, but what we ended up doing was jamming the giant invoice in the rotating doors of the Ministry of Finance.
I was there, yeah.
And then chanting giant invoice.
I often say you will never understand this chant. Of all the conventions and actions I've been at, I mean, the giant invoice, I mean, I forget the guy's name from, I don't know where.
Pascal.
Yeah, Pascal. Yeah. I don't know where my mind just went. He's from Nairobi. He's actually from Korogochu, where Acorn, Kenya, works. Our organizers actually knew Pascal. But take the giant invoice or something was a chant for a while. He let him in. And I thought, I don't know how you, this won't be in our permanent Acorn chant sheet, you know, take the giant invoice.
It kind of is. But after, like, during that action, I feel like that was the exact moment when we're, like, jamming this, when members are jamming this invoice into the door. So I thought, I can't believe I'm getting paid to be here. How lucky am I? Like, this is right. The best job.
ever. Yeah, no, ever. I feel the same way, yeah. And I was not in that doorway.
So we're talking to Claire Gallagher, who's the Research and Communications Coordinator for Acorn Canada, and Peggy Cook, who's a National Administrator, about what their jobs are. And, you know, normally when you think of a grassroots membership-based organization with 100,000+ members like Acorn Canada, you think, okay, the organizers and leaders. But a lot of what makes the car go is people who do the jobs that y'all are doing. So, Claire, we were talking about some of your research reports. Mm-hmm. Is there, what's the most difficult thing you had to do this year?
You know, the most difficult thing, I really enjoy research, and it sounds boring. I like reading, and I like being involved and knowing what's going on in
politics. Solving the puzzle, so to speak. Yeah.
And I think, like, a part of my job is kind of taking information and making it digestible for our organizers and, you know, for the organization to understand, you know, what do we think about this. There's often a lot of, you know, we just have a new conservative government in Ontario, and they really like to spin things like they're doing low-income people a favor when that's really not the case.
Yeah.
It can sometimes, you know, it can be challenging to read what they're saying and, you know, understand that, no, this is actually negative, because they do spend a lot of their effort in trying to come across like they're doing a good thing. So, yeah, I guess just kind of digging deeper below the message that's out there.
Well, this committee that you seem to have spent some time with on affordable housing, trying to figure mm-hmm. out what the policy was, I mean, from what the reports and meeting this morning.
Yeah.
Oh, mercy, that must have been painful. I mean, you could tell I was not reacting well to it, you know,
yeah.
And this was like the end game of it. And Claire's going to show me the charts, which I saved people from having to all see, and we wouldn't have had time for the show. We'd still be looking at those charts yeah. trying to puzzle them out. But that's putting, you know, angels on the top of some of these policy pins is mm-hmm. very difficult, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. No, it can be. We're lucky, you know, Acorn has a lot of allies. We have a lot of good, like, policy people that, you know, want to work with us and have a lot of the same, you know, they think the same things
same
are good, same
yeah.
orientation. So, you know, we get a lot of help with that. We are part of some different coalitions, and we have regular meetings to discuss, especially around things like inclusionary zoning, where, you know, there's a lot of debate about what are the
yeah.
right, what's the right approach. So it's really helpful to have some experts weigh in on that too.
So Peggy Cook, girl, you know, door blocker here in Ottawa in 2011, we got to hear her most exciting fun time she's mm-hmm. had, but so that wasn't very behind the scenes, the story she told us, but you're
yeah.
so in your job sort of behind the scenes, what's the most fun you can remember having either this year or at all or whatever?
Behind the scenes, I mean, it depends what your idea of fun is, because mine probably isn't the same.
We're asking for your idea of fun,
yeah.
So I mean, not everybody's going to say, oh, let me sign up for the Peggy Cook door blocking job with
the
giant invoice.
The door.
Okay. I just overstated your role. Huh?
Yeah, I think it's not, you know, it's fun in that I enjoy the work, but we do a lot of surveys to our membership, and it really connects you to what's going on. Like, I understand, like, the issues. I come from, you know, a working class background, but when we do a survey about the impact of, you know, energy retrofits on low-income tenants, and the stories that we hear from the tenants when they get back to us in the survey, it's just, you know, it's a big reminder of why it's so important that we're doing this work, and why we're knocking on doors and speaking to these people and giving them an opportunity to, you know, make change, because things can be really bad. You know, people have bad experiences.
Absolutely. And for a while, you were the key sort of liaison for some of our members that were in what we call unstaffed offices that
mm-hmm.
were spread from here to there, or temporarily didn't have an organizer.
Yeah.
So you were the local group organizer, Miss Research and Communication Director,
yeah.
weren't you? Or
yeah, and we're still doing that work, and the communications tools that we use are really key to reaching those people. We do a lot of online actions. We've created, you know, different websites that give people the tools that they need to do some kind of mobilizing in their communities where there aren't organizers or Acorn offices. That they can get involved in, so it helps them still stay connected with the issues and, you know, make their own change.
So you've opened up the door to exactly one of the next questions we wanted to talk to here with Peggy Cook and Claire Gallagher. So when you talk about online tools, mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of our listeners, they might think Facebook, but mm-hmm. I mean, what do you mean by online tools? How does that work and what do you do with that?
Yeah, I mean, social media is definitely, it's a powerful tool that we use. We have a lot of followers, we have a lot of different pages and ways that people can connect with us. So social media is a good way to get our message out there, to share these reports and this research and share, you know, what's going on. But we have other things we use as well. So we use online action tools where people can send emails to their representatives. It kind of works in a couple of ways. So it shows support for an issue. It kind of just, you know, we get to flood MPP and MPs inboxes with our message.
Members of Parliament, it's
yeah, members of Parliament and members of Provincial Parliament with our message. But it also helps us build our list. You know, we get, then these are people that want to connect with Acorn and we can connect them with other campaigns as well. So it's a kind of, this is a good way to reach people, especially where we're not able to door knock.
Good. And websites. You've got a website that you've tried to tend to, and it keeps getting more traffic. But a lot of people seem to think websites are almost passe. And in the world of Facebook, it's so easy to have a Facebook page or group. But we're still getting a lot of activity on the Acorn Canada website.
Yeah, well, I think there's... how to say this? I guess it's like, I mean, obviously always our primary way of reaching people is door-to-door. Like, that's, like,
sure.
key to the work we do. That's kind of the foundational cornerstone of getting low-income and moderate-income people together. But, you know, I think people are, you know, it's the future now. So people do want, I think what's key about our website is just that it's, like, a central online place where people can find out more about us. It's like websites are maybe passe in some ways, but also like when you're looking for a restaurant to go to, I mean, I don't know if everyone else does this, but if I'm looking for a restaurant and I look up a restaurant that doesn't have a website, I'm not going to go.
Sketchy.
Right?
Sketchy.
Like, I'm not going to go.
That's the kind of place Wade would be eating at. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to go there.
So, like, our main website, acorncanada.org, sort of functions as that, like, central web home for Acorn, but then we also have... some more
campaign
like
websites,
yeah, modern sort of mini websites, mm-hmm. like campaign websites that are focused around particular things and are more about like driving people to actually take action and facilitating people to be able to do that, especially people in places where they don't have an Acorn organizer at their door. There isn't a staffed Acorn office yet, so it's a way to like connect people with us.
One of the charts you did in your report yesterday or last evening had to do with what the most popular pieces of the website people go to. What do you recall? What were the first two or three that people most often went to?
Usually, well, like about. So like just the description of what Acorn is about.
Well, and how natural that is. I mean,
yeah.
I got lobbied on a call a minute ago about we're in the process of moving the Acorn International website, thank the Lord, from Joomla, which is legacy of earlier people here who had, you know, you and Claire's jobs at some level. No one knows what Joomla is, but it was open source, you know, whatever, that used a Drupal. I mean, the whole thing sounds like, why did we ever do a Joomla Drupal? I mean, or whatever it was. But we're moving to WordPress, which is at least a simple piece of English, WordPress.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were lobbying me for, you know, what's important there, we'll have to have a better page that just says what Acorn International
yeah,
is. So
yeah.
Just a forecast, since I have you all on the radio trapping you, I need some help on that. I'll be asking both of you to help me coordinate something that is, they want a somewhat professional job as opposed to just the slapdash way we might put it together. So,
right.
You know, we need to start thinking about that. But that is... people hear Acorn and they want to know what's going on, and you know
yeah.
it is common. I mean, you can't escape, and Wikipedia is not necessarily where you want to end up, but you want to end up on your own website to tell your own narrative of what's happening, right?
Definitely,
yeah.
Yeah. And then, like from there, it's like campaigns. I think was the next one, and then resources. So people want to know what campaigns we work on, and then people want to read, like, the reports and, you know, see what see, I guess, more about the campaigns in detail and what stuff we come up with.
So in looking at communication, y'all also do a lot of text messages. Talk about a, you know, flood to produce a drop of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, those reports we were sending out 50,000 to get just a couple hundred responses sometimes. Is texting working?
Well, I think it seems like when you look at the numbers that way, it might not be. If you send,
because obviously that's the way I was. That's the way I was looking at them, you fool. But yeah.
But actually, we are getting some good results. So we just send out a text to maybe like a large list, mm-hmm. and then, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time for an organizer to send some responses back to people who reply. So, for example, in Hamilton, we recently sent out a text about an event that was happening there to, you know, like a couple of thousand people. And we got back 43 yeses to people who wanted to come out to the event. So I think for the small amount of time that's required.
Well, let's talk about the cost. I mean, yeah. That didn't... What did that cost you to send out 1,000 or whatever number of texts you did? Do you know offhand, Claire?
A couple of thousand texts would probably cost about $40.
So in some ways you're paying, I think this is one of the ways that people look at this, you're paying a dollar for identifying somebody who's engaged with an issue. So
yeah.
If it cost you $40 and you got 43 responses that allow you to move forward, potentially sign them up, get them involved,
yeah,
that's not bad for a retention rate in terms of your investment in organizing.
It's true, and I think the key thing with texting and the rest of these tools is just that it doesn't replace anything that's the core to Acorn's work. So we still door knock, we still phone bank.
It just adds on.
It just adds on. So, you know, if you boost like your yes list by 43 members, then that's great, but you do all the other work too.
Now, Twitter is just, I think, worthless, but we still measure Twitter. We have about 6,000 people who are following Acorn Canada on Twitter. Now, do you get anything? And, of course, in the U.S., President Trump has ruined Twitter for everybody. If I had already started not liking it, I would, like, you know, have to swear it off. But what do you get from Twitter?
I mean, I will say in general that you do have to kind of meet members where they're at. So, you know, there's a lot of members who do say, like, just text me this or whatever. Or there's members that will never answer an email but will answer a Facebook message or a WhatsApp message in like 2 minutes. So I think diversifying the way we communicate with our membership is important. That said, Twitter, I find, is better for allies.
Politicians journalists. I mean, journalists and politicians seem to just suck up Twitter.
But. Yeah, it's a visibility tool, I would say, for us more than a communications tool. So it's just like everything that we post on our website, we also post on the Twitter. We retweet people's stuff. We thank allies on Twitter. It's just kind of a, like, I mean, visibility is always good. Like, you're just keeping Acorn in people's, like, sites and whatever. And again, for the time investment, I mean, it takes 2 seconds to tweet something.
You know, when people have watched the documentary about Acorn recently, some of the question and answers are often asking me, well, you didn't have social media. I mean, how is that as an organizing tool? I think Claire answered that pretty well a minute ago. It's supplementary. You know, and I keep saying this is a great communication tool, social media, but it's not a great organizing tool. I know this is going to be hard for y'all to believe because I'm talking to Claire Gallagher, who's the research and communications coordinator at Acorn, and the national administrator, Peggy Cook, with an E. And time has flown by. We could have kept talking. I know y'all were worried how would we fill the time, but we're almost done. So if people wanted to know more about Acorn Canada, obviously there's a website.
Yeah.
What is that website again?
acorncanada.org.
www.acorncanada.org. And how else can they find out about Acorn, Claire?
Well, they can email me, research@acorncanada.org. I'm happy to answer questions, share research, and connect people with, you know, things that are going on in Acorn Canada.
And direct them to some of these reports. I mean,
yeah.
We're doing some excellent work on financial issues and a lot on housing, and housing has become a global issue. But we also are trying to get some of those pieces in the Acorn International website. I know Claire sent me a whole bunch of stuff that we need to sort of revamp. People might want to send a dollar or two to help U.S. Canada Acorn. How would they do that from our listeners?
They could go to acorncanada.org and click on donate. It's right on the front page. Or, you know, you can also email Claire again.
or just send that,
on Facebook,
send that fiver or tenner in mail. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sings, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.
This program is produced by the Arkansas Broadcasting Foundation, KABF-FM in Little Rock, Arkansas, and is distributed through Affiliated Media Foundation Movement, AMFM, serving the needs and interests of low and moderate income Americans.